1510 or 1-800-293-5366. That's 1-800-293-KFNN. Ham Radio and More is brought to you by AEA Incorporated, Wallpaper World, and Ken Nichols. Now, here's the host of Ham Radio and More, Lynn Winkler.
CQ, 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 Arizona, and welcome to Ham Radio and More, the only show of its kind in America. I'm your host, Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today's show is sponsored by Wallpaper World, Ken Nichols of Linda Brack Auto Mall, and AEA Incorporated. My guest today is Chuck Brelsford, K2WW, and Chuck is here to discuss what ham radio was like way back in 1923, and many other interesting historical things, plus we'll talk about the AWA, and it's not the American Wrestling Alliance. But first, as usual, some QSTs. Our phone number, of course, is 241-1510, 241-1510, or in DX land, 1-800-293-KFNN, and we'll be glad to pay for the call. Give us a call and participate in the show. Upcoming this week, there's a couple events that you should all be aware of and participate in. Wednesday is the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club meeting, the monthly meeting at the Scottsdale Senior Center. That begins at 7:30, and we're going to have the Drug Enforcement Administration there, and they're going to talk about drug enforcement and other interesting things. So come on down to the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club meeting. Thursday is a Central Arizona DX Association meeting at SRP's Para Club in Tempe. And if you want more information on any of these events, just give me a call here at KFNN, 241-1510. We'll go to the phone since I see we have a call here. Doug from Sedona, Arizona. Welcome to Ham Radio More, Doug.
Well, good morning. I guess it's afternoon.
Are you hearing us well from in Sedona?
Oh, through a little bit of haze and static.
Okay. How are you doing today?
Oh, real good. Say, I noticed you had a few calls the last several weeks on broadcast band reception.
Okay, yes.
So forth. Anyway, I just finished an Air Corps loop last night. Well, I didn't finish it, but it's workable. And I got one problem I got a question for you on.
Okay. We'll see if we can get the answer for you.
Okay, it's a 3-foot diameter, and I used 14-gauge stranded wire, 12-turn center tap, and I'm running the Palomar preamplifier through it to tune it.
All right.
And my tuning range, as I found out last night, is from 420 to 1420. In other words, I'm missing the top half of the broadcast band. Any suggestions?
Do you have any, Chuck?
outside of taking two turns off the loop, I was trying to get around that. Somebody told me to do that.
Nick, are you out there listening? Our resident technician. Chuck, do you have any response to that?
The only thing I'd know would be to take a turn or two off of the loop.
You got a center tap, so it would have to be two turns.
Yes.
And then what happens if it starts, if the bottom end is way up around 600 or 700 kilohertz?
Then you can add in capacitance in parallel.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, but you can't do that at, the way I have it right now, then.
I don't think you can put capacitance in series with that kind of a setup.
Yeah. Okay, well, so much for more of my experimenting, then.
Well, you're getting into an area that I guess we don't dwell on a lot.
Well, you should, 160 meters.
Well, there's not a lot of people on that.
Well, not in the summer. Not people a lot of people on 6 meters either, but I hear them off of a repeater in Prescott.
Well, you're going to hear more and more on 6 meters because you don't need any code to get on 6 meters, but 160, you need a good antenna. Do you ever get on 160?
No,
oh, yes. I operated on 160 years past quite a bit. In fact, when I started out, it was 200 meters, just about the frequency we're on right now.
Yeah.
That's what one of the questions were a couple weeks ago about where the spark gap transmitters were, right around 1510.
That's right.
Spark gappers. Yeah, there's a ham up here that's writing history deals for the Smithsonian. on spark gaps and all kinds of things way back then.
Well, we're going to talk about the Smithsonian. Well, we're not going to talk about the Smithsonian. We're going to talk about spark gap transmitters, though, a little bit later.
Who is that person?
Bill Byron, and I don't know his call letters offhand.
Thank you.
Chuck's writing. That's something of interest for him. Because, as you'll hear, he's into the AWA, the American Wireless Association, and there's a museum in Rochester, New York, which we'll talk about, that has all those old stuff, all the old equipment, all the old gear.
Yeah, Bill even showed me some pictures. I was over there a month or so ago, and photographs of people, DeForest and Einstein, and all these people all lined up in groups, and he was telling me about their personalities, how they all hated each other.
Well,
I'm exaggerating.
I can tell you that they didn't like Sarnoff.
Yeah, that was one of them.
Yes, Al Gross, who's a frequent caller and, of course, guest on my show, had some dealings with him, had to sue him on something a long time ago, and actually won the case. We're still trying to put together that show because it should be real interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
All right.
Okay, I'll fool around with my antenna some more.
Try it in parallel, as Chuck suggested.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Doug.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. All of a sudden I've lost my sound in my hearing, in my earphones. Okay. There will be testing this Saturday at DeVry, if you're interested in getting an amateur radio license. And that'll be taking place at DeVry at 22nd Avenue and Dunlap. 952-9596 would be the phone number to call. You can get more information or call Ed there at 952-9596. Let's see. The Spring Fest at Cochise Amateur Radio Club, May 2nd, May 3rd. It takes place in Sierra Vista, Arizona. And, again, it's going to be May 2nd and 3rd. Thank you, Kevin. And let's see. They're going to have an FT-747 to give away, a Butternut HF-6VX antenna, many more things. Let's see. It's going to be at Green Acres, which is 9 miles east of Sierra Vista, 2 miles south of Highway 90 on Munson Road. Talk-in is on 14616. There's free admission and free parking. The fee for tailgating is $5, which includes five free prize tickets. Ham radio and computer vendors, of course, are welcome. There's going to be licensing, testing available as a walk-in basis. Club members may dry camp on site. Handicap facilities are available. Computer buffs are welcome. For more information, give Rick a call at 459-1039, 459-1039. That's the Cochise Amateur Radio Association. Then, if you're interested, the ARRL National Convention, is going to be held August 20th through the 23rd. That's the big event for the whole country, and that's going to be in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Airport Marriott Hotel. Again, that's the National ARRL Convention, August 20th through the 23rd. If you want more information on that, I suggest you can call 714-737-7000. Oh, here's a 1-800 number, 1-800-322-CORP. 1-800-322-CORP. That'll give you some information. Let's see. Or you can mail checks to HamCon, Post Office Box 570-756, Tarzana, California, 91356. $10 early bird registration. They're going to have breakfast, lunch, banquets, breakfast. They're going to have a tea hunt. They're going to have auctions. They're going to have a wolf hong. If you've never been to one of those, you should go. It's kind of interesting. Many, many prizes, all kinds of stuff. So that's the national convention. And don't forget Fort Tuthill, July 24th, 25th, and 26th. Fort Tuthill, Flagstaff. That's the ARCA Fort Tuthill Ham Fest. Again, that's July 24th, 25th, and 26th. And that should be fun. There should be a lot of people there. They always get a good turnout. So make plans now, July 24th, 25th, and 26th. And, of course, if you want to, in Dayton, the Dayton Hamvention, which is the ham fest in the United States, I mean, it's supposed to be gigantic, takes place April 24th, 25th, and 26th, just one, not even a full month. And that's, of course, in Dayton, Ohio. And it's the largest ham fest of the year, like I said. And if you want more information, give a call to 513, area code 513-454-1456. 513-454-1456. You better hurry up and get room reservations, because I was told there's not too many rooms left for that convention in Dayton. Also, I want to thank the ATV, Arizona Amateurs on Television Club. They're rebroadcasting the STS Space Shuttle 45 mission, and I don't know, the video all of a sudden got real clear the last 2 days. The first day or two, didn't get color like I usually do, and this last couple of days, the picture's been beautiful. So whoever is rebroadcasting it, the club repeater is doing an excellent job, and it looks really good. And if you have a cable-ready television, channel 57, an outside antenna, you can get the rebroadcast of the shuttle mission. And also, amateur television, as a general rule, is on channel 57 cable. So, not cable 57, but cable-ready channel 57. So, television. You do need an outside antenna. It's a beautiful color, though, where I live. It comes in real good. Okay. The work convention ended, and I just want to take a couple of minutes to talk about this real fast, and then we'll get with Chuck. Work 92 ended, and Work was, of course, the World Administration Radio Conference, and it finished its work on schedule. The major decisions are that the HF broadcasting expansion will take place, an additional 790 kilohertz of spectrum, including 200 kilohertz below 10 megahertz, was allocated to the HF broadcasting. The conference also adopted a recommendation that a future conference should consider the possibility of aligning the allocation to the amateur service around 7 megahertz with due regard to the requirements of other services. This would permit the issue to be addressed on its own merits without the precondition of broadcasting expansion. There were some U.S. proposals for a mobile satellite uplink at 2390 to 2430 megahertz. It was not adopted. There were so many other things that went on that I may devote a program to it later in April, but I don't want to take the time now. But that convention went as scheduled, and nothing really affected the ham radio bands in that, whereas the last time we got a couple of last work convention, we got a few new bands. Okay, let's first start out. Again, Chuck Brelsford, K2WW, is my guest here today, and he became licensed in 1923, is it, and been a ham for a long time. And let's just start out with, how did you first get interested in electronics? When did you first get out interested in electronics, and what moved you to get interested into ham radio?
Well, then, as a small boy in a small town in central Ohio, I had an older brother who became interested in wireless, as it was called then. Mm-hmm. And he set up a spark gap transmitter and receiver so he could talk to his friend across town, all of 1 mile.
I want to stop you right there. There's some people out there, I can tell you my mom, for instance, who might listen, who's going to say, what is a spark gap transmitter? Can you tell us real quickly what it is?
Well, it's an electrical device where you have a high voltage that creates a spark that jumps between two electrodes, and you connect in some coils and capacitors with it and an aerial, and it'll send out radio signals. But it's in code. It's not in voice. It's dots and dashes.
Okay.
And so that's what my brother started on. He was with it for a little while, but then I really got interested in ham radio along about 1922, when I was a sophomore in high school. And another friend and I practiced the code and learned it so that we could perhaps take a license exam and get a sending set of our own. The first license test you might be interested in. I was in Cleveland and lived in East Cleveland and had to go downtown to the federal building where the examiner from the FCC...
Was it the FCC back then?
Department of Commerce.
Okay.
At that time, gave the exam. And there were about 20 of us sat in a room.
How often did they give the tests? I'm sure it wasn't as often as it is now.
They came over from Detroit and gave the test, I think, once every two or three months.
Okay.
And there were about 20 of us in this room. We sat at tables, and no headphones, no oscillator. They used a buzzer, like a doorbell buzzer, and had a sending machine called an omnigraph, which would send dots and dashes at certain speeds. And so he would start that up, and you'd hear it around the room, and you'd have to copy from that.
How many classes of license were there at that time?
There were two, in the amateur. There was the first class amateur, and then there was an extra class. The extra class required 20 words a minute and quite a bit of theory. The first class, which I took, required 10 words a minute. And I just barely made that, and I just barely passed the theory. The theory, it wasn't an answer.
A multiple choice.
Multiple choice thing at all. You had to write something out.
That's when tests were really tests.
They'd ask you to draw the diagram of the receiver you had or were going to use, the transmitter you proposed to operate, so a little bit of theory on why it worked the way it did, and then, of course, the laws and regulations and procedures that you needed to use when on the air. It was fun, and the license was good for 2 years.
It was a free it was free. You didn't have to pay for that, correct?
No charge.
And how long were licenses good for back then?
2 years.
That's right.
You had two licenses. You had one license for the operator, which was a certificate like a captain of a steamboat would have. You could frame if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had another license for your station, separate, which was a long page. It was about 10 paragraphs in it. It described the power of the antenna. Mine was 5 watts with a T-type cage antenna consisting of many multiple wires.
Were the people who gave the tests, were they hams at all, or were they just part of the government?
Well, they were both.
They were both.
They were both, and very fine people, and later on, I got to know some of the radio inspectors around, and they were really very good people. So that was the way I got started that. But I had to, of course, have a set and get the equipment. You couldn't go out and buy anything at the store except parts, a few parts occasionally.
Well, where you can, would you soon? I
No. I think Greeby was in business and some of the others, but, gee, that cost a couple $100.
Okay, we'll continue in one moment. Someone asked on the phone, they called in, and want to know where the ATV transmitter is located. It's on the top of Shaw Butte, which is around 19th Avenue in Thunderbird. So that's where the ATV transmitter is located. And if you're looking for the frequency, I believe it's either 439 or 431. I'm not exactly sure, but it's one of the two. I think it's 431 now that I'm thinking of it. But Shaw Butte was the question they were asking. Okay. Let me do some business, and then we'll get right back. You're listening to Ham Radio and More on KFNN AM 1510, and our phone number is 241-1510. And we'll invite your phone calls. If you have a great story about being a ham back in 1920s or before, you know, if someone out there is going to make Chuck a young man, and you're an old-timer and Chuck's a young man, call us and tell us what you did in 1908 before Chuck started. Okay, there's something really special going on at Wallpaper World starting this coming Thursday. Wallpaper World has purchased from a large fabric company that went out of business a large assortment of vertical fabrics. Now, some of these fabrics are expensive macrames, expensive silks, jacquards, all kinds of expensive fabrics. There's also some non-expensive ones, but a lot of expensive fabrics. It'll not be advertised anywhere until this Thursday in the newspaper, the Arizona Republic on Thursday, but samples will be in the stores by Wednesday. It's a first-come, first-served special with quantities extremely limited to stock on hand. Here's your chance, really, to buy a custom vertical blind for less than anywhere else and fabrics that would be 10 times the price normally. For instance, 59 inches wide by 47 inches high, you can buy it for $35.28. It's custom-made first quality. Normally, even at Wallpaper World, it would sell for as much as $285. I mean, this is a steal. This special is for real, and when the fabrics are gone, they're gone. So my suggestion is go to Wallpaper World Wednesday. Mention you heard about it on Ham Radio More, because they're going to look at you and say, where'd you find out about it? Because the ad's not running till Thursday. But go on Wednesday. You'll get the best selection since, again, the ad doesn't break till Thursday in the paper. Free measuring installation, however, is not available on this special sale. And if you need vertical blinds, don't pass this sensational special off. Wallpaper World, six locations in the Valley since 1977. You can call 272-4788, 272-4788 for more information, or the location nearest you, or ask them if they got the samples in yet. Wallpaper World really does make selecting custom window coverings an enjoyable experience. Okay, I want to ask a trivia question, and we'll give away a free Sundrop T-shirt. Our phone number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. And again, it'll be the first caller with the correct answer. And all I want to know is, between the years 1985 and 1991, the last 6 years or so, tell me the state, not the number-wise, but percentage-wise, the state with the largest growth of amateur radio operators, the largest percentage of amateur radio operators, which state in the union? That's for a free T-shirt. So give us a call, 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. Okay, we were talking about
the early licenses.
Right.
Going back to that early transmitter license, incidentally, they specified the wavelength of 176 to 200 meters. That's about 1,700 to 1,500 megahertz, which is, as I say, includes today's broadcasting, some of it.
Mm-hmm.
The call at that time was 8 BMU. There was no W in front of the 8. Because they, most of the signals from the United States didn't go outside the country. And so you had no W or N or K or anything like that.
Was there a power, what was the power limitations at that time?
Well, the maximum power limit was a kilowatt, same as today.
Now today you can put 1,500 out.
Well, all right. You're right. You're right. I'm still thinking in terms of the old kilowatt.
Okay.
And
Now I want to make sure that's only on certain bands. Don't all run out and go stick 1,500 watts on something you're not allowed to do, guys.
Yes.
Go ahead.
You might be interested. The first receiver had really was had a two-slide, had a coil with two slides on it that would select the number of turns of wire. Was made out of an oatmeal box with wire wrapped around it in coil form. Had a variable capacitor and headphones. One tube, UV200 tube, which cost $5 in those days. In fact,
wow.
I had to wait 4 or 5 weeks to get it.
That was a lot of money back then, too.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. And but it was sensitive and worked very well. The first transmitter I had was a UV202 tube, which is a 5-watt tube, 5-watt plate dissipation, that is, and would run 300 or 400 volts on the plate.
Now, I want to make this clear. You didn't have a transmitter that we're used to. You used just a vacuum tube.
That's right. You had to have the vacuum tube. You had to have the parts. You couldn't go and buy it assembled without spending a fortune on it. And the you'd have the tube. You'd have to have a socket. You'd have to have a rheostat to regulate the filament voltage. You'd have a power supply, which would be separate, and you didn't have solid-state power supplies. In fact, the first I had was anything but. It was what they called a slop jar rectifier, which consisted of you took your mother's jelly glasses and with aluminum and lead combination of plates in there, you could set it up in bridge fashion with about 16 jars, and it would rectify the AC to a pulsating DC. And filtering, well, you sort of had a choke, and maybe you had one microfarad capacitance.
But you didn't have any problem with TVI because there was no television.
No, that's right.
But there were other problems. Why did I bring up that?
There were broadcast stations on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And neighbors all around, of course, were very interested in broadcasting. And you had to be careful not to transmit at times that it was going to get your neighbor all upset with you. Same TV, really. At any rate, there was a period there of about 3 years when the government required you to keep a silent period from, I think it was the government, or through ARRL, of 7 to 10 o'clock in the evening, which was prime time for broadcasting, so that folks could hear the broadcast programs without interference from a neighboring ham.
Mm-hmm.
And that went on until they improved the receivers and people got superhet receivers and things.
Wow.
Back in those days, they had what they called the COP circuit, which was just a simple tuned detector tube and audio amplifier.
Where did you learn about all these things? I mean, you weren't a tinkerer, were you? You just happened to come up with it? Or, I mean, did you read a lot of books? I mean, were you interested in school? Or?
Well, there's Radio News, I think, was out at that time, and they had information about it. QST, of course, was in publication since 1915, and they published a lot. And then I, along with friends, we'd get together and talk about it, and then we'd experiment and try things, change the wiring around and see if it worked any better. Sometimes it would, sometimes it wouldn't.
Okay, we were talking about the spark gap transmitter, and you brought with you a tape today that that we can play that would have a little bit of the sound of the old spark gap transmitter.
Yes, in fact, the old spark gap transmitters, as I mentioned earlier, you have a spark jumping between two electrodes, and then they got fancy. They had a motor, what they called a rotary spark gap, where you would have the electrodes spinning around but driven by a motor, and it would give it a musical tone.
Sure.
So that you would have a high pitch or low pitch depending upon the speed of the motor, depending upon the frequency of the current, whether it was 60 cycle or 500 cycle, would change the tones.
Okay.
The, I've got a little tape here.
All right, let's try to play it, and we'll let everybody hear.
Now,
go ahead.
All right, I might say now this was made by W6AX Thorne Mays for demonstration purposes, and he actually had a half-kilowatt spark transmitters and then had frequency variation to get the different tones. So let's see if we can come along with something on this.
Okay. Two stations going at the same time. Okay, very good.
So you see, in order to pick out a station you wanted to talk to, you listen to one of the tones, either high tone or the low tone in that case.
Plus, what were they saying?
Mm-hmm.
What were they?
They apparently had been sending some messages because they had numbers.
Okay.
And that, of course, is where the Radio Relay League came in. They had to relay the messages across the country. You couldn't have a transmitter in New York State and talk to somebody in California. Signals wouldn't go that far in the spark days,
mm-hmm.
at least on the power that amateurs had.
I forgot to ask you a simple question. What kind of antenna did you use?
Well, you'd have an outside antenna, usually consisting of, four, five, or six wires, perhaps anywhere from 50 to 100 feet long, and up anywhere from 20 to 70 feet in the air.
None of these 72-element beams, huh, Stan?
Oh, no, nobody, no.
No 50-foot towers? Or?
Well, some of them had towers, yes, but holding wires. But
we haven't received a correct answer yet on the trivia question, so we're still waiting for a correct answer at 241-1510. Or 1-800-293-KFNN. Don't be shy to call and guess. We want to know which state in the United States had the highest increase percentage-wise of ham radio operators. It's kind of interesting to find out the answer to this. So give us a call. Win a T-shirt. You know, it's a good T-shirt. And right now we're going to take a little break. We're going to go to W7ZMD, Nick, in Nick's Corner. And he's going to talk today about the Yaesu FT-470. And give us a product review on that. And again, call us for a free T-shirt. Get us the name of the state that had the largest increase. And Nick Seuss, W7ZMD, if you're ready, take it away.
Thank you, Lynn. This is Nick Seuss from Nick's Corner. This week's segment is going to be about the Yaesu FT-470, a dual-band handheld that's been on the market for several months now. We appreciate the loan of this item by the local ham radio outlet, courtesy of Gary Judd et al. The Yaesu FT-470 has gained acceptance as one of the most popular dual-band radios for this year. In the VHF spectrum, the unit covers 2 meters. In the UHF spectrum, it covers 440 megs of the 70-centimeter band. Extended receive range is 130 to 180 megs and 420 to 450 megahertz. This unit is much less susceptible to intermod than others which, unspecified, happen to receive over a much wider spectrum. This is really noticeable when you get downtown in Intermod City. This unit operates FM only. This is the most popular mode for talking on these frequencies and probably the most practical coverage for a handy talkie unit. One of the very nice factors about purchasing a Yaesu radio is that Yaesu sells a complete unit with virtually all of the features included in the base price of the unit. There are no options which must be purchased and installed later in the case of the radio. Unfortunately, it makes it difficult for the first-time buyer to know which radio to purchase. Some offer a less expensive basic unit, but when you add the options, just for convenience in operating, the unit becomes really much more expensive. Also, consider that you may have to pay someone else to install the options at some later time. From this perspective, I believe Yaesu has offered a complete unit for a very reasonable price. External options available include a speaker mic, a flexible antenna, and a mobile hanger bracket. Power output of this unit depends on the battery pack chosen and varies from 1 to 5 watts. Obviously, the more power output, the bigger the battery pack. This is a choice the buyer must make. The dual band receive is a neat feature for the listener who wants to monitor both bands with a very small, compact unit. Some features of this unit are subaudible tone encode, commonly called PL, selectable for each channel frequency. Number 2, DTMF, commonly called touchtone pad. 3, standard repeater offsets, or the very easy plus and minus selection. Number 4, CTCSS, continuous tone controlled squelch system. There's an elegant way of saying paging or decode, actually. DTMF encode and or auto dialer. The unit has 21 memories and 2 VFOs for each band. Scanning features such as skip and priority channel on each band, memory scan, scan to limits, etc., etc. The display is liquid crystal and includes enough information that you can clearly see the status of all important factors easily. The display has both the primary and alternate frequencies at the same time, which is very handy. Programming setup and operation. I happen to have the opportunity to evaluate 3 different manufacturers of 2-meter units at the same time. The FT-470 had the best operating manual and was the quickest to get programmed and up and running. Operation. I found this unit very easy to use. After a weekend of referring to the book when I wanted to do something different, use of the unit became more or less instinctive. Annoyances. I have normal size fingers, but I do have fingernails. I discovered that if I used my fingernails to press the keypad buttons, that they were very readily stuck and hung locked down. I had to be very careful to reset the buttons each time I did anything. Everyone with big fingers complains about the size of these miniaturized keypads. I guess it's fortunate that most of the more commonly used functions are on the edges of the pad. I found the safest way to program these small keypads is to use a pencil with a new eraser and to use the eraser under the pencil as a button pusher. The speaker in this unit was the better of the 3 which I compared, however the speaker mic is easier to listen to. Apparently these small speakers are very inefficient. The addition of an external speaker improves not only the audio quality, but the loudness of the audio as well. That wraps up this segment. Again, I would like to ask if there are any products you would like to hear about, let Leonard me know. Thank you. This is Nick's Product Review Corner, presented by Nick Sues, W7ZMD. Phone number 992-4133. Amateur radio equipment repair is my business and is located near 40th Street and Bell Road. Again, the phone number 992-4133. Now back to you, Len.
Thank you, Nick. And anybody who needs radio repaired or fixed or questions on it, give Nick a call. 992-4133 does a good work. I'd like to take a moment to tell you about an AEA product that I recently received. It's the VSB70. It's a fast scan TV transceiver, which is why I'm so excited about amateur television. If you're even remotely thinking about getting involved in amateur television, this unit from AEA is for you, especially if you're an appliance ham like I am. The unit's about 7 inches wide, about 9 inches high, and about 8 inches deep, so it's really quite compact. And it works on 12 volts, and it pulls with a camera only about 5 amps. All you need to do to transmit fast scan television, and fast scan television is regular TV, is plug in your video camera, push 4 buttons, which include the power on button, the camera on button, the camera input button, and the transmit button, and you're on the air. And if I can do it, anybody can do it. It has a down converter built in, which you can get to transmit on TV channels 3 or 4. You can transmit on 2 different frequencies, which are included and supplied, the crystals are supplied in the set. To receive, you can use VFO tuning. Or you can receive, of course, on those 2 frequencies, but around here you do need the VFO tuning. It works great. The amateurs on TV tried it out at the Hamfest, thought it was good also, and I guess you can call Larry Dilley, he'll tell you a little about it. He used it. And I checked into the ATV Net last Wednesday, as did 16 others checked into the ATV Net. It's on Wednesday nights, and it's really neat to see as well as hear all the people you talk to. So if you're thinking about amateur television, I recommend personally this VSB70. I mean, I use it, I am using it, and it works good. Call 1-800-432-8873. Again, the number at AEA is 1-800-432-8873. Tell them to send you their free catalog, and it'll have the VSB70 in as well as all their other items. And please remember to mention Ham Radio and More of this show. It's how you got that number. Also, stop in at Ham Radio Outlet, 17th Avenue in Camelback, and tell Gary you want to buy the VSB70. It's priced right. It really is. There's some other companies making ATV equipment, of course, out there. But if you check prices and what you get, they're not really any better at all as far as price is concerned. AEA is priced right, and it's probably less money than you think. Actually, it's less than a dual band handy talkie, and you're on your way to ATV, which is, I think, a lot in the future of amateur radio. I really like the unit. AEA, where the ham action is at. Okay, we got a few answers on the question of which state had the highest percentage of ham increase, but they were wrong. I mean, it's not Arizona, which was guessed a couple of times. It's not California, which was guessed more than Arizona. It's not New York. It's not going to be a large state because it's a percentage increase, and they've actually increased almost doubled in 6 years. So, again, our number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN, and we have a T-shirt, so give us a call. Tell us the state with the largest percentage growth in the last 6 years. Okay, Chuck, you were continuing about the transmitter.
Well, yes. I just want to add in one more thing about spark transmitters. They emitted a very broad band and, of course, were replaced by the vacuum tube with a continuous wave signal. And so the spark transmitters were outlawed. And actually, in 1924, it was estimated only about 1% of the amateurs were still using spark. We get to 1929 or thereabouts, and most of the receivers were home-built with air low-loss coils. They'd have a detector tube and maybe one or two stages of audio tube. The transmitters were generally a breadboard arrangement with tubes and components spread out on the board and wide open. And, of course, there wasn't any TV in those days, but I'm sure it would have generated a lot of TVI had there been. The transmissions were code CW and AM phone. And, of course, they worked a lot of DX at that time. You could work Australia from here, New Zealand, and European stations in South America.
Were there many hams or amateur radio operators elsewhere in the world?
Yes, but not nearly the population that numbers that there are today. And but they were there, experimenters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you get on into the 30s and the 50s and so forth. You get into receivers that are manufactured, like the Hammerlin Comet Pro, the SW3, the National HRO. Then Heathkit came in after the war, which was a boon for people who didn't know how to drill metal cabinets and things. They could insert the components and tighten up the screws and be on the air.
It was for the appliance ham of the 40 years ago.
So to speak, yes. Hallicrafters, of course, was in there, and they did very well. I'd like to just make one comment about interest in the history of early wireless. This AWA that was mentioned is the Antique Wireless Association, and it's headquartered in near Rochester, New York. There are about 4,000 members. It's quite a prestigious outfit. They publish an old-timers bulletin of about 50 pages every quarter. They publish an annual review of perhaps 80 pages or 100 pages. They hold conferences. The biggest national conference for historical radio is held in Rochester with perhaps 800, 1,000 people attending. It's a three-day affair during
wow.
which there are talks, lectures, demonstrations, everything from some of the early history of radio to how to repair the old Philco cathedral that Grandpa had.
Okay, we have a caller on line one. Let's get to him. We'll get right back to that. Hello, welcome to Ham Radio More. Is this Steve?
Yes.
Hi, Steve.
Hello. I wanted to check and see if there happened to be any literature or real brief sheet, maybe info sheet on the killing ons or a few basic details on fast scan and slow, for that matter, television and the local area.
Well, yes, Arizona Amateurs on TV produces a little piece, you know, to get you interested in them.
Newsletter type?
No, they really don't have a newsletter.
Right.
They produce a sheet, which I don't have with me, that talks about their net and talks about the transmitter, the repeater. Is there something maybe I can answer?
Let's see. Well, if they do that, if that was convenient, I could probably talk to Kevin and leave a name and number and see whether they might be able to forward something.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have Larry Dilley's phone number with me or Norm Sharp, but if one of you guys is listening and you want to give us a call, I'll get your number from you. Otherwise, let Kevin take your number off the air,
sure.
And I'll get Larry to give you a call, absolutely. They're always looking for people interested in ATV.
Yes.
And are you a ham?
As yet, no.
Okay.
I'm checking into that gradually.
Okay. Well, the one good thing about amateur television is that you need only a no-code technician license or better to be on ATV, so you don't have to do Morse code if you don't want to.
So you could use the, what, 6 meter or other?
Well, amateur television is on 440.
That's right, okay.
Is on 440. So
that would be within the, also including the no-code.
Anything over 30 megahertz. If you're a no-code tech, you can transmit and do everything over 30 megahertz.
Right.
So that gives you 6 meters, 2 meters, 220, 440, and 1.2 gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in 900, there's a few little spots we use, but not too much activity goes on there. But that's all available for a no-coder. So there's a lot there.
Let's see. One other real quick one was, is there a N-type unit possibly usable in a more convenient and mobile mode, use a handy talkie style or size?
For ATV?
Yes.
Well, a man named Earl Campbell actually produces his own looky talkie, he calls it. And it does have a little camera in it. It's about just a little bit bigger than a package of cigarettes.
Right.
And it does broadcast, it transmits, it has everything in there. So he's certainly a member of the club. In fact, it's his repeater. That he's a trustee of the repeater. So you might be able to talk to him. That's the smallest that I know of that exists. Most people just use a simple... a camcorder,
right?
With a transmitter.
Well, that was basically, I was looking at the using a camcorder with a smaller, more basic radio set. Handy talkie.
Sure.
Configuration.
Oh, yeah, you can use a handy talkie,
sure.
Just as long as it's 440. The only thing. The thing is that you really need a transceiver. If you get a 440 transceiver, an ATV transceiver, it has everything built into it. Just plug the camcorder right into the transceiver, and you're on the air. I mean, it's just that easy. It puts out a watt, and you're on the air. As far as a handy talkie, they do use 2 meters to talk for voice. Because while one person's showing video and voice, he can't hear anybody, so you listen on 2 meters.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you do need almost 2 radios. You need your 440 and you need a 2 meter radio.
Right. Okay. Well, good. I want to make sure of some of those, and also see if there were some material available on the local group.
Well, Kevin will take your name. Kevin will take your name and phone number, and I promise you, I'll get you in touch with Larry Dilley.
That sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks
hold
very much.
Okay, hold on. Okay, I got to do one more piece of business, and then we'll continue. And we still don't have a correct answer to the state that has the largest increase in hams. We've had a lot of guesses, but no one's guessed this state. I'll give you a hint. It's west of the Mississippi. This is a true story. I stopped off at Linda Black Auto Mall in Scottsdale Thursday afternoon. Well, actually, it was Thursday morning, about 11:45. I thought I'd surprise Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ, and maybe take him to lunch. But I saved some money, because when I got there, Ken was out. I asked the man in the booth, and at the booth, actually, the office next to Ken. Ken has a nice office, and this was next to his office, where Ken was. I was told Ken would be back about 1 o'clock or so. He was out delivering, as the gentleman said, another car. So I just left the car telling Ken I was there. Of course, the reason for the story is Ken is out of the office some of the time delivering cars. He sells so many vehicles with his new Super Savers plan that he is busy constantly. And yes, he delivers a lot of these cars himself to people. I mean, he's very personally involved. It's not like he sells it and it's gone. He wants to be involved with each and every sale, and he delivers many of them personally. It's unheard of in this day and age. But then Ken is unique. His personal service can't be beat. When you talk about hassle-free buying, Ken, his name pops up first. I mean, really, you can get your vehicle of your choice, any make, any model, with any option at the lowest prices available anywhere. And next week, I'm going to read you some letters about that were sent to Ken. It's just amazing. I mean, he's selling cars all over the world. Seriously. I mean, all over. People all over are buying. And you get the lowest prices first thing. You tell him what you want, he gives you the price, the lowest price. No long-term negotiating is necessary. If you want to lease your vehicle or you want to arrange low-cost financing, he does that too. What can be better than the best? Nothing. Ken Nichols is the best and the only person to go to when you're in the market for a new vehicle. So give Ken a call. Seriously, 228-2336. 228-2336. Ken Nichols for the best real deal around. And it sure doesn't hurt that Ken's a ham radio operator too and a real nice guy. 228-2336. Ken Nichols. Fleet prices direct to you. Welcome, Alan, to Ham Radio and More.
I had a question. I missed your show last week, so I'm not sure if it's something you already covered. But I know there was a story on the news about a week or two ago about a guy in North Phoenix that got shut down that was running a pirate station.
Yes, I read about that.
I was wondering if you've ever thought about doing a show on pirate radio or having him on.
Do you know him?
No.
Oh.
No, this isn't a plug for him. I've just been reading a lot of articles, like in Popular Communications, about the group of people that's trying to get low-power FM something back the way it used to be. I guess the FCC doesn't allocate licenses for that now.
Well, it's certainly interesting, and I'd entertain the thought. I wouldn't want anyone to think that we're condoning that. Actually, he was, from what I read, interfering on some people's appliances, and not having a license can cause nothing but problems. I can't recall what frequency he was transmitting on, but I think he was on the AM band, wasn't he? Or on the FM band.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can't condone that, but I'd certainly be interested in maybe pursuing that. Pirate Radio, I guess they did a whole movie on that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of a good movie. But I don't know. We want to say that licensing's important. I'm not sure we want to condone that.
Okay.
Are you a ham?
No, I am interested in becoming one, though.
It's so simple. Come on down to one of the meetings, the Scottsdale meeting Wednesday, or go to DX meeting Thursday, and just come down and get involved. It's really easy to become a ham, and there's a lot of stuff going on. It's growing and growing faster than ever before. You want to take a guess at what state had the fastest growth? Maybe you win a T-shirt. West of the Mississippi. We only got 5 minutes left.
Oh, man.
Pick a state.
Texas?
Nope, not it. And no one's guessed this state. If no one guesses it, we'll keep it going until next week. Someone will have it next week. I won't give the answer. So, okay. But I'll think about it, Alan.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, as you can see by the big clock on the wall, we're getting down there, Chuck. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to put in one more comment about this historical aspect of radio. We have a local club here in Phoenix called the Arizona Antique Radio Club. And it's really a very active, fine little group of people who are interested in collections of old sets, mostly broadcast sets, although there are some members. One member has quite a collection of Collins ham equipment, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they have meetings periodically, and it keeps up the interest.
Oh, there's some great equipment. I went to Antique Electronic Supply in Tempe when they had their, when the Arizona Amateur Ham Fest sort of was there.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so it is a real, real good group that way.
Do you want to give us the name or the phone number or who to contact for that group if you want to get more information and the AWA? And we didn't even get to talk about the museum.
Well, actually, for the local club, George Fadauer, George A. Fadauer, Jr., so to speak, at Arizona Antique...
Arizona Antique...
Antique Supply.
Antique Electrical
Electronic,
Supply.
Electronic Supply Company.
Right.
Is president this year. And...
believe it or not, I believe I have his phone number. If anybody's interested in getting more information on that, I have it here somewhere. Where are you? Well, here it is. It's 820-5411. 820-5411 is George Fadauer at Antique Electronic Supply. And he can get you information about the Arizona Antique Group. And then what about the AWA, which is unbelievable, the magazines they put out. I was looking at that one magazine plus that one book there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the AWA, if you write to Antique Wireless Association, Post Box E, E for Edward, at Breezeport, that's B like in boy, R-E-E-S-P-O-R-T, Breezeport, New York, 14816, 14816. Tell them you listen to me on this show, and they'll be glad to send you information, applications about the organization.
Well, that sounds good, because I'll tell you, there's 4,000 members. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the museum, but that museum, they have everything there. Yeah, you got about 30 seconds, not even.
On the museum, they have a collection that is on a par with that at the Smithsonian Institution.
I thank you, Chuck. I'm sorry, this hour goes fast. Thank you for being my guest today. Thank you, Ken Nichols from Linda Brock. Thank you, Wallpaper World. And thank you, AEA Incorporated. Next week, we're going to have Dave Kelly from TriArc in studio, and we'll find out why their club is growing faster than all the other clubs. It's amazing.
You've been listening to
73's Arizona
with Lynn Winkler, KB7, LPW, Ham Radio, and more has been brought to you by AEA Incorporated.